morning, everybody.
I'm told I must repeat myself because I'm supposed to be recorded. Morning, everybody. I really want to take this opportunity to thank and at the same time welcome our visitors from SARS and National Treasury. And also I think we've got representatives from the German Embassy. Yeah. The purpose of our meeting really is to deal with two items, two in the sense that there are two agreements that need to be ratified, and the rest of the business is prelims. To take us through, we don't have to make a decision today on those issues. I would not want to take a chance and say I want to introduce people. You know, these days you have to be very sensitive about how you pronounce people's names and surnames. Unless you are Mufamadi, you get used to your surname being mutilated from time to time, other than Mafumadi and all those things. So I don't want to subject you to the kind of mutilation that some of us go through. I am Thabo Mufamadi, the chair of the Finance Standing Committee. On my left is Bradley here, the person who drives the processes of the committee, the committee secretary. And obviously, this side is members of parliament and also members of the committee at the same time. I don't think I would want to introduce their names at this point in time. What is important is for us to, or for us is to get the people who are going to lead, just to introduce themselves. Two representatives from National Treasury, you will tell us who you are. And we'll then take the presentation as outlined there. You can see you already started preparing the presentation. Cindy, who's going to lead on your side?
Chief Trustee Younger, Chief Financial Treasury, and Grant Pandeleva, that will be the start table there.
Okay. Thanks. Over to you.
Good morning, Chair and the members. Thank you for giving us this opportunity. My name is Yanga Mputa. I'm from the National Treasury Tax Policy Unit. We are here for the ratification of the two tax treaties, that is Germany and Mexico. Okay. Before the tax treaty can come into force, it has to be ratified by Parliament. So what happens is that we'll do the negotiations of the tax treaty, and then the minister signs, and then Parliament, it has to come back to Parliament for ratification. And then ratification, as I've said, can only take place after the signing of the treaty. So the tax treaties that we present today for ratification constitutes what we believe is in the best interest of South Africa. Because when we negotiate with another country, and then we have to come up with an agreement that fits both countries. So the tax treaties that are here today for ratification, we hope that they are in the best interest of South Africa and also the other two countries. Okay, before we can negotiate a treaty with another country, National Treasury, we have to look at the reasons why we need that treaty. So the reasons for the South African Germany tax treaty is that there is an existing tax treaty between South Africa and Germany, but that tax treaty is old because it came into force in 1975. And it was before South Africa moved to the residence based system of taxation, and it was before South Africa introduced the capital gains tax. So there was a reason to renegotiate the old treaty so that we can come up with a new treaty that has got all the aspects of our tax system. So before we negotiate a treaty, first we have to look at the trade and investment flows between the two countries, because treaties, they assist in increasing the investment flows between the two countries. So So the investment by Germany into South Africa were 75.2 billion in 2005, 82.2 billion in 2006, 98.2 billion in 2007. And some of the German companies operating in South Africa include Siemens, Daimler, Chrysler, Adidas, BMW, Mercedes-Benz, etc. Investments by South Africa into Germany were 19.3 billion in 2005, 22.6 billion in 2006, and 27.4 billion in 2007. And South African investors in Germany include Sasol, Sappi, Tiger Woods, etc. And the trade flows between the two countries are as follows. Exports from South Africa into Germany were 21 billion in 2005, 26 billion in 2006, and 35.3 billion in 2007. And imports from Germany to South Africa were 49.1 billion in 2005, 57.8 billion in 2006, and 55.5 billion in 2007. So you can see that looking at the trade and investment flows, there is a lot of economic relations between the two countries, hence the need to enhance the relations with the tax treaty that is more revised. Another treaty which is here for ratification is Mexico. This is the first treaty between South Africa and Mexico. It's not like Germany, because Germany we were revising the old tax treaty. Currently, we don't have a tax treaty with Mexico, so this is the first tax treaty between South Africa and Mexico. The reason for the tax treaty is that there are growing economic ties between the two countries, and also Mexico wanted to have a tax treaty with South Africa, so the reason it was mutual, both countries wanted to have tax treaties with each other. The investment flows between the two countries are, unfortunately, we don't have statistics there of investment, but we know for sure that South Africa is the fifth African investor in Mexico in terms of numbers, meaning that South Africa falls on number five in terms of investment into Mexico from Africa. And the South African companies operating in Mexico are Alexander Forbes, Dimension Data, Genco, Anglo-American Standard Bank. I must say, when we visited Mexico in 2007 to negotiate this treaty, there was a lot of enthusiasm from our South African companies operating there, because they said that they wanted to have a treaty because the treaty assists in uncertainty in tax matters and also to assist the investment flows between the two countries. Coming to the trade flows, exports to Mexico from South Africa to Mexico were 926 million in 2005, 1.5 billion in 2006, and 1.2 billion in 2007. And imports from Mexico into South Africa were 1 billion in 2005, 1.9 billion in 2006, and 2.1 billion in 2007. So those are the policy reasons for having these treaties between these two countries. I'll hand over to Mr. Ron van der Merwe, who will deal with the technical aspect of the tax treaties.
Thank you, Chair. And good morning to everyone. Equally thankful for the opportunity of doing this ratification. I'd like to just start off with one or two comments on the whole process, and just firstly to stress that, as my colleague Younger said, this is a negotiation between two states. And it's very seldom that you get everything that you want in a negotiation. And often if you do, it means that when the other side gets back, they're just going to stall and never ratify the treaty, and you're never going to have anything in the future. And it reminds me that a certain professor who taught negotiation said that the secret of a good negotiation was when both sides left the table being equally unhappy, and that's always stuck in my mind. Also, the result will always depend on the level of economic development and the relationship on that basis between the two states. And particularly with some countries, and we'll be dealing with some of them today, the lack of resources creates a great dependence in that country on things like withholding tax, because perhaps they don't have sufficient resources in their revenue authority. and therefore it's easier to move collection to the private sector. But I think it's true to say that in all the treaties, we have a result which is mostly equal to the best position which those states have given to other states in their negotiations. And in some cases, South Africa has managed to get a better deal than has been offered to other states. If I could move to the slides, an overview, the purpose of the agreements my colleague referred to, we say, is to remove the barriers to cross-border trade and investment, and this is really something which we've seen that works. I remember that before we had a treaty with the United States, they were way down on the list of our trading partners back in 95, 96. And immediately we got that first agreement in place after the 94 elections. The investment from America really started coming in to the position where the USA is in relation to South Africa today. How do we remove these barriers? First of all, the elimination of double taxation. Residence-based system of taxation will always result in the possibility of double taxation arising in two states when you have these cross-border transactions. And this treaty, of course, works to eliminate that. As referred to by my colleague also, it creates certainty of tax treatment in that the treaty creates boundaries within which investors know that they can operate in the other country and they have certainty with regard to tax treatment. There's a reduction of withholding tax rates. And then the next two issues are of great importance, of course, to a revenue authority like SARS. And that's the prevention of fiscal evasion and assistance in collection. Prevention of fiscal evasion is focused on exchange of information. And I don't think I have to say to the committee that this has been such an issue in the G20, in everything to do with taxation and financial matters around the world in the last year, let's say, and exchange of information is of great importance to a revenue authority in enabling us to actually collect what we're supposed to. Assistance in collection refers to the fact that in these treaties now there's an article which allows the two states to collect outstanding taxes on behalf of each other on the basis of reciprocity. And that's also been a great advance from what was in the past virtually a futile exercise. When someone had left your country, if he hadn't paid his tax, it was extremely difficult to actually go out and get that. Now you can rely on your treaty partner to do that for you and using the full force of his law. So that's very important to us. And then also, finally, it provides another avenue for the resolution of tax disputes. Taxpayers under the treaty would be able to raise disputes with their country of residence if they feel they've been unfairly treated in the other state without having to resort to going through the courts, which would be the normal case under the domestic law of any country. As it is in South Africa, our Income Tax Act says you have a right to go to the courts. The mutual agreement procedure merely says if your tax authority feels that you have a case, he should take it up with the tax authority of the other state and endeavour to resolve that matter. And that would not go the route of courts. So basically those are how we try to remove tax barriers to cross-border trade and investment in relation to these treaties, and I'd now like to move to the South Africa-Germany double taxation agreement. By way of introduction, as virtually every other tax treaty in the world today, It closely follows the OECD Model Convention with a number of aspects taken from the United Nations model, which in any case mostly follows the OECD model. However, a number of articles are different or contain aspects which are different from the normal South African approach. These articles and other articles which are of interest in relation to periods for permanent establishments and withholding tax rates in the South Africa-Germany CTA are as follows. Article 5, permanent establishment. If I could explain, a permanent establishment is a threshold for taxation in the source state. So if I'm a resident of one state and I want to do business in the other state, the treaty will create a threshold. And until I've crossed that threshold, called permanent establishment, there's no taxation in the source state. The general term or definition for permanent establishment is it should be a fixed place of business. In relation to construction, however, this is a temporary process, construction, and therefore it's not so much a question of a fixed place of business. And in order to therefore decide what should be a permanent establishment in relation to construction being a temporary activity, we bring in a time limit. Now, the OECD model has a 12-month time limit for construction. The UN has a 6-month time limit. In the South Africa-Germany DTA, building site, construction, assembly, or installation project, or any supervisory activity in connection therewith will be a PE if it exists for more than 12 months. I would like to mention in relation to that that the reference there to supervisory activities in connection with those sites or projects is also an issue which arises and comes in from the United Nations model. With regard to shipping and air transport, under Article 8, Paragraph 2B provides that profits from the operation of ships and aircraft in international traffic shall include profits from the use or rental of containers. These are all items which are used in transport of goods in international traffic. The rule for international traffic, shipping and air transport in international traffic, in virtually every one of our treaties, is that those profits are taxable only in the state of residence of the operator of those ships and aircraft, which bottom line means that South African Airways is taxed only in South Africa, even though it flies to Germany. Lufthansa, on the other hand, would be taxed solely in Germany, although it flies also to South Africa. That's the normal procedure for Article 8, shipping and air transport. Turning to Article 10, dividends, in practice, withholding tax vary very widely internationally. The dividend rate in South Africa, Germany, DTA, and this is the limitation placed on a withholding tax paid from the country of source, that being the country in which the company paying the dividends is a resident, 5% limitation on the withholding tax, where the shareholding is at least 10%, and for portfolio, 15%. Paragraph 3 of that article provides that income from rights or debt claims which participate in profits and which are deductible in determining the profit of the debtor remain taxable under the domestic law of the source state. And that's because that's not really a dividend. It's an above-the-line deduction, which is more in the nature of interest than a dividend. So that remains taxable under the domestic law of the source state, that being the state which is given the deduction. Paragraph 4 provides that the term dividends would include income derived by entities referred to in Paragraph 3, which are German entities, one of them being a Stiller, and excuse my pronunciation now, Chair, Stiller Gesellschaft, which is a silent partnership. And there, in terms of German law, they're regarded to get dividends as opposed to interest. Article 11 with regard to interest, once again, withholding taxes vary widely internationally. In the South Africa, Germany DTA, we have a provision which says that interest is taxable only in the state of residence of the owner of that interest, the beneficial owner of the interest. That is also the case with royalties. In that paragraph, one provides that royalties are taxable only in the state of the beneficial owner of the resident. Article 13, capital gains. Paragraph 2 is really an anti-abuse provision in that in all treaties, taxation of shares is given normally, taxation from gains on the sale of shares is given only to the state of residence. However, the principle with relation to immovable property is that the state of source, which is the state where the immovable property is situated, should have an unlimited right of taxation. So the provision in paragraph 2 says that if the value of shares sold is created principally, in other words, more than 50%, by movable property situated in the other state, then that other state, the source state, should equally have a right of taxation on the profit on sale of those shares. That has become very much a provision which we negotiate into all of our treaties. Paragraph 6 deals with a situation where taxpayers emigrate from states. And it could be called a form of exit tax, in that if you leave a state and emigrate to another state, the state that you leave would of course be trying to get its capital gains tax on the assets which you own in that state before you leave. In paragraph 6, the state which is being left protects its rights of taxation. And it specifically provides that state retains a taxing right in respect of the capital appreciation on shares. However, we insisted on bringing in a further proviso to this paragraph which said we find it fair that if someone leaves the country, for argument's sake, leaves Germany and comes to South Africa, that the Germans should have a right to tax the appreciation in those shares, but only up until the date that he actually leaves Germany. In other words, the appreciation in those shares which arises once he's come to South Africa, well, we should have the right of taxation there and not the state which he's left. Article 14, income from employment, provides that the provisions of paragraphs 2, which is an exemption in the source state where it's short-term labor for less than 183 days, that shall not apply to remuneration from employment within the framework of the hiring out of labour. Article 16, entertainers and sports persons. Paragraph 2 is virtually a paragraph which clarifies the extent of coverage of this article dealing with entertainers and sports persons, and it provides that the personal activities which are taxable under this article exercised in the other contracting state shall include remuneration of any kind paid for the use of or right to use name, picture or other personal rights of those persons, the entertainers or sports persons, as well as any consideration for recording and transmission of the activities mentioned in paragraph 1 by radio or television. That's not a new issue. To us it's a clarification, because the commentary on these treaties has always said that you have a right of taxation in the state where these activities are performed, which includes all income which is related to that person's activities in your country. And this is nothing more than that in effect, although it does go further in relation to what could be classified as royalties. Article 17, dealing with pensions, annuities and similar payments. Paragraph 2 provides that payments received by an individual from the social security system of the other state should be taxable only in the other state. In other words, the state that pays the social security benefit has the sole right of taxation of that Social Security benefit. And then paragraph 3 deals with payments, recurrent or non-recurrent, made in respect of damages sustained as a result of war, political persecution, or military or civil service, shall be taxable only in the state which pays those payments. Now that, of course, goes back in history all the way to the Second World War and some of the payments which Germany still presumably makes. Article 26 deals with the limitation of benefits. In relation to that, it provides that neither contracting state is prevented from applying its domestic legal provisions on the prevention of tax evasion or tax avoidance. This also is a principle which is set out very clearly in the commentary, and it says that nothing in a treaty will stop a state from using its domestic tax abuse provisions. This is a confirmation of that. And then in subparagraph B, we deal with the situation of Germany applying its controlled foreign corporation rules, and it says there that they are not prevented from levying taxes on amounts which are to be included in the items of income of a resident of Germany under the fourth part of the German law. That's their CFC provisions. And then finally to the protocol. The protocol contains a number of clarifications and explanations of provisions in the convention as well. These are mainly clarifications and explanations of treaty interpretation. However, paragraph 2 deals with a situation which arose from the negotiation of this treaty. Under the old treaty, local recruits to either embassy, in other words, the German embassy in South Africa or the South African embassy in Germany, local recruits were taxed by the state which paid them. So, in other words, local recruits in South Africa, the German embassy under the old treaty, were taxable only in Germany because Germany paid their salaries. However, this is different from the normal principle that we use in treaties and, of course, in domestic law. So in the new treaty, we negotiated with Germany that we should follow the normal principle, which is that if a local recruit at an embassy is a national and a resident of South Africa, then South Africa should have the exclusive right of taxation. After some debate, they agreed to that. But they did then ask us to bring in, I think you'd call it a sunset clause in relation to these people, because what was going to happen was if they became taxable in South Africa, the tax payable on their salaries would increase rather dramatically. So at the time, we agreed that the provision enabling taxation of these people's salaries in South Africa and, of course, on the other side in Germany would not come into effect for a period of 2 years after the entry into force of this new treaty. But it would only apply, that sunset clause would only apply to people employed by the embassies on the 31st of March 2000. Germany had a particular problem in relation to this because they had some people with really long service who would be affected quite severely by this change in the treaty. I think those people are probably gone by now, Chair, and have retired gracefully. But in any event, it's a sunset clause in respect of those few people who were employed in the German embassy, South African nationals, on the 31st of March 2000. That gives them a two-year grace period before they revert from German taxation to South African taxation. Those are the comments that I have on the treaty with Germany, Chair.
Okay. I think we should take one presentation at a time. If there are questions of clarity on the German taxation,
presentation. Let's deal with it now before we move to the next one. Over to you, colleagues. Honorable Mutetwa, followed by Honorable Dubazan.
Thanks, Chair. If I may be clarified in terms of the tax action, the tax rate, especially on the export to Germany. If I look all our imports and exports, seemingly to me, I'll make an example here on page 3, you'll find that we have exported to Germany 21 billion in 2005. But what is the import that we're coming from us is about 49.1 billion in 2005. And it goes on almost in every export and import. We are always far less than what we export. What causes that? Was this because this tax rate, when it has been long being under reviewed, or what exactly the main cause? Because if you look at like the same one that I said in Germany, 35.3, and then the import from Germany, it was 65.5, even more than double on what we export. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. My first questions are directed to Ms. Yangamaputa. And you must excuse me, I'm new in this committee. I would first like to know the content of the treaty, even if it was drawn in 19 whatever up to now, because now we are ratifying what we don't know. I always, what is it? What is this literature? The content of the treaty. Before we even go to the technicalities where we start explaining the articles, but what is the content? I would love to know that. And I think the other honorable members actually covered me with the other question. Now, coming to the technicalities, I've got quite a few. I need a clarity. The first one is on article number 5. You know, the way you explained it, it caused so much contradiction. Because here you are referring to the fixation, you know. The text is going to be based on those fixed, you know, fixation, permanent establishment. But now you use examples of things that are temporary, like you have said yourself, construction project. Now, it leaves me with a bit of uncomfort, especially with the time frames given and the last sentence given. I don't know how the South Africa then benefits out of that. Because it says there, more than 12 months before PE will exist. Now, I just need a clarity there. There's a bit of contradiction in my mind. So if you can just clarify that. And then another one is article number. Thank you, Chair. Article number 8, shipping and air transport. If you look at the stuff, okay, it talk about, it says, article number 8, paragraph number 1, towards the end, traffic shall be taxable only in that state. In that state. I would suggest that instead of saying in that state, rather say in the resident state, then it becomes clear. Because if you're saying now in that state, you know, we might lose a lot of money because we don't know what state. Because these are contracting states. It's either Germany or South Africa. Whereas if you're saying in the resident state, then we are aware that it is in the resident state. And how far is the DTI aware about this? Because if you look at the German side, when they refer to these ratifications, they include cooperation, they include trade. And as yes, this is what it says, the side. This is what it says. It says, if you look at the text covered, article number 2, It says the existing taxes to which this agreement shall apply are, in particular, in the Federal Republic of Germany, it will be the income tax, the corporation tax, the capital tax, the trade tax. And in South Africa, it should be normal tax, it should be secondary tax, it should be... Now, how far our department, which is the DTI, aware of this ratification or the amendment that we're supposed to do? And then last year, I'm not going to be long, it goes to article number 13, capital gains. Now, what percentage is going to be used by indirectly principal of the immovable property? Because now you talk about the capital gains should be accrued. Once you reach the 50%, then the resident states or the indirectly has indirectly principal will have a right then to tax. So what percentage are we going to use there? And article number 16, entertainers and sports persons. I'm a bit confused there, but maybe the chair is going to help me with the others. Because I remember that SARS, film producer, when we were doing our taxation amendment bills, we put it on the side. We put it on the side. We never said anything about it. It was a closed thing. And then here we were talking about it. So how do we deal with this? Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Yes. Followed by Honorable Jimene.
Let me firstly start by raising a generic question here on the outstanding, because it's apparent that the repercussions of not having treaties with most of the countries are quite huge, more especially to our economic situation. Now, I just want to know, obviously, where are we in terms of the backlog? I mean, how many countries are outstanding in terms of us striking treaties with them? Because in my opinion, the ramifications thereof are quite unfortunate for our developing countries. And secondly, on the Article 5 on permanent establishment, the issue of the threshold, just for interest sake, I mean, are there provisions for our preferential procurement systems taken care of in such arrangements? Are these particular thresholds sensitive to our local, I mean, preferential procurement aspects? And I'll appreciate if I get more information on the, I think it's at the article, obviously I know it's placing more emphasis on what is happening in Germany. But in my opinion, really I'll need more explanation on this article 26B. What does it really imply? Because I didn't get the explanation clear on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just a very broad question. There was a very important statement that your throat was said very casually, that all treaties are done in the interest of South Africa. To me, that statement is a very important political point of departure. Now, I just want to test our common understanding as to, because that statement will determine also the content of your agreement. Now, what I want to test is that what is your criteria of in the interest of South Africa so that you should have a common understanding? Thank you, Chair.
I think we can allow you to respond.
Thank you for asking questions, although some of them are difficult. you raised the issue regarding the content of the treaty. As you have said, the main aim of the tax treaty is to provide certainty between two countries, because the tax treaty sets the manner in which taxes are to be regulated. And by doing so, it gives certainty to cross-border. It increases the cross-border investment flows because the tax treaty assigns tax rights between the two countries. And so that is the main aim. That is the main aim of the tax treaty. The content of the treaty, this is what Mr. Ron van der Merwe was dealing about, because the tax treaty has got Article 1, as he has said, that is taxes covered. So these are the contents of the treaty. There are taxes covered and then definitions, and it says who benefits in the treaty and who the permanent establishment issues. So that is the contents of the tax treaty. But looking at the policy side, you look at what are the main aims of the tax treaty and how will the tax treaty help of South Africa. Coming to what he has said, the criteria interests of South Africa. We, as Ron has said, regarding the tax treaty between South Africa and America, which is a live example, before we entered into a tax treaty between South Africa and America, the investment flows between the two countries were low. The trade flows were low. So as soon as there were tax treaty, so it happens that businesses, it's easy for business to do business with that country because now there is an agreement in force that people can look at it beyond the domestic law. Because what happens is that domestic law changes every time, but the treaty, it doesn't change every time. So people, businesses look at the treaty because it assists them, because it is static, it doesn't change. So they look at it, and they look at it beyond the domestic law. There will be the domestic law, but the treaty will help them in doing businesses between each other. So it helps, it sets out the manner in which countries can tax each other. And how is that, as Ron is going to explain the issue of permanent establishment, as we have said later. Coming to the trade flows, you said that the exports to Germany are less than the imports. The treaty itself does not regulate the trade flows. The trade flows are more regulated by the World Trade Agreement and all that. But we can say that as soon as there is a treaty, the trade flows, they tend to increase. Because the treaty helps more investment flows, but it has got another factor of increasing trade flows. As you know, that the reason why there are more imports from Germany is that most South Africans import German cars. That is the fact. So you find that because we are dealing with the figures, you find that what we import from Germany is more expensive than what we export to Germany. I think Mr. Ron van der Merwe is going to deal with that.
Thank you, Chair. I'll try and deal with the remaining questions. Just firstly, in relation to the question on what's the content of a DTA, as my colleague has said, it provides certainty in relation to taxation between the two states. And the content of the treaty is set out in a structured manner which follows, and virtually every tax treaty, in the world, follows the same pattern, in that it would deal with who's covered and what's covered, firstly. Who's covered are residents of the two contracting states. What is covered is all taxes on income. And I think we need to focus on that in relation to the question on the trade, on DTI. The trade tax in Germany is merely a tax on income. So what's covered from the German side is all their taxes on income, and what's covered on our side is all our taxes on income. It does not deal with things like consumption taxes, VAT, etc. Those are not covered under this treaty. In any case, they're very seldom cases where there's double taxation on consumption taxes, because that normally focuses on the state where consumption takes place. So very little chance of double taxation in relation to that. After that, the treaty will deal with all the different kinds of income, all the way through from income on immovable property in Article 6, right the way through to Article 21, which deals with other income. And other income is anything which has not previously been dealt with. And in relation to those items of income, it assigns taxing rights to the states, shared rights, exclusive rights, for argument's sake, as we had with international shipping. That's what happens between Articles I'm talking the model 6 and 21. Then we have an article which deals with how countries will eliminate double taxation. Now that is decided by the domestic law of each state. So for argument's sake, in the elimination of double taxation article, South Africa would merely say we will allow credit within certain limits set forth in our domestic law in relation to elimination of double taxation. So we basically follow what domestic law says in relation to elimination of double taxation. You then have the general articles in these agreements dealing with exchange of information, assistance in collection, the mutual agreement procedure that I referred to, and there's also an article on non-discrimination where the two countries say we will not treat each other's nationals any worse than we treat our own people. That's a guarantee given by the two states. So that's the basic content of these treaties, and that's where the certainty comes in as my colleague said in her reply now. These treaties have a longer life than domestic law, in that domestic law changes more often than a treaty does. And that's what creates the certainty, and that's what enables investors in other states to look across the border and say, yes, I have an opportunity to invest in that state, and the tax implications are ABC. If I could go to Article 5. I'm sorry if my explanation wasn't very good. Let me try and start that one from the beginning, if I may. When we talk about business profits, we talk about a permanent establishment. Now, in the context of treaties, the interpretation of permanent isn't, as you might find in a dictionary, forever. It's not that. What we're looking at is for businesses which have existed in the other country. So if I'm a resident of, let's say, Germany, and I'm doing business in South Africa, I become liable to South African tax once I have a permanent establishment. So if, for argument's sake, I look at a German company which is selling its cars in South Africa, I would be looking for a fixed place of business in South Africa before I could tax it. Now, in relation to cars, that would be the showroom where they sell these cars. And immediately it crosses over a time limit of 6 to 12 months, then that is regarded to be a fixed place of business and they become liable to tax in South Africa. That, of course, it's on a basis of reciprocity. The same would be the case for a South African company doing business in Germany. The exact same rules would apply. So there's a commentary which in fact sets out all of these issues and which is followed by the countries which sign up to these treaties. And that commentary clarifies the position and the criteria which are used to determine what is a permanent establishment. In plain, simple terms, if you look at the definition in paragraph 1 of Article 5, it says any fixed place of business through which the business of the enterprise is wholly or partly carried on. So the question then is, what is a fixed place of business? And that's where we come in and we say it has to be at a place for more than 6 to 12 months. That's the normal interpretation. So construction, as I've said, is of its very nature temporary business. You would expect someone who comes in to do a building or a road or lay a pipeline, whatever it is, to come in, do his business and complete it, hopefully. So what we try and do there is, because we know it's going to be temporary, as opposed to the German company selling its cars, which could carry on for 10, 20, 30 years, we say, okay, let's bring in a special time rule for these construction projects because of the fact that by their basic nature they are temporary, and that is 12 months in this treaty. With regard to Article 8, I just wanted to say that I take your point, but that is fairly standard wording, and the interpretation relies on the first part of that sentence, because the first part of that sentence refers to profits of an enterprise of a contracting state. And an enterprise of a contracting state in treaties is a defined term. An enterprise of a contracting state is defined as being a resident of a contracting state. And I think that solves the problem of saying, well, it's taxable only in the resident state, because an enterprise of a contracting state is a resident of a contracting state. So we're saying profits of an enterprise of a contracting state, which is defined as a resident, from the operation of ships or aircraft in international traffic, shall be taxable only in that state. Yes. Sorry. My answer, Chair? It's subparagraph G of paragraph 1 of Article 3. The terms enterprise of a contracting state and enterprise of the other contracting state mean respectively an enterprise carried on by a resident of a contracting state and an enterprise carried on by a resident of the other contracting state. That's the one. G. Article 3.1.1G.
Okay.
Sorry. Now, continue. With regard to the question on Article 13, sorry, I'm just going to get there quickly. That was in relation to the paragraph dealing with gains from the alienation of shares and similar rights in the company, the assets of which consist directly or indirectly principally of immovable property. Principally in relation to that paragraph means more than 50%, means 50.1%. So immediately that 50% limit is crossed over, then any profit on the sale of the shares is taxable in the state where the immovable property is situated. Okay. Article 16. I don't think I was clear in my explanation there. That article deals only with entertainers and sports persons. In other words, it's the golfer, it's the soccer player, it's the cricket player, and in relation to entertainers, it's the actors and actresses, it's the person who sings in the band, a film producer as such, and the profits from the making of films is not covered by that article at all. It talks about only income from the personal activities of those particular individuals, and we often say it's the person in front of the camera that we're talking about in this article. It's the sportsman, it's the actor and actress in front of the camera, it's not the people behind. Okay. The next one I heard was, is there a backlog on treaties? In my humble opinion, I don't think so. And I think my colleague from Treasury would need to come in on this if I don't answer quite correct. Simply to say, I think South Africa, for the most part, except for parts of Africa where we're really battling to get countries to the negotiating table because of things like a lack of resources on their part, for the most part, I don't think that we have a backlog anymore. I think South Africa at this stage has a relatively extensive treaty network which covers all of our major trading partners, and more importantly, Chair, covers also most of our, the countries which have a potential for investing in South Africa, because it's that investment which we see as growing the economy and creating the jobs and etc. But perhaps you would.
I must say, from Treasury side, we since 1994, Ron has done, because I was not here, a tremendous work in trying to negotiate all the treaties so that we can come up to where we are today. We don't have a backlog, because we decide we've done all the treaties with our major trading partners. But at the same time, as Ron has said, the backlog is within Africa, and we've got treaties with most of the SADC partners, except maybe for Seychelles, Angola, Madagascar. We have managed to talk when the president went to Angola. I was there also. But we managed to talk with the Angolan people regarding the taxes, but they said that they're going to come back to us. So we are concerned now with mostly the SADC, because in terms of the SADC protocol, there is a provision in the investment protocol saying that as SADC countries, we must have treaties with each other. So we are concerned with, more especially with Angola, Madagascar, and Seychelles, which are SADC. You're not Seychelles, it's Angola and Madagascar, which are SADC countries. Other than that, another concern we have is Africa, because South Africa is, we can say that is most of the developed countries in Africa. So we would want to have treaties with most of the African countries that South Africans are investing into. But as you can see, that we on preliminaries we've got Kenya, because our businesses have been pressuring us to have tax treaties with Kenya. So we are trying to get into Africa, but it is difficult, because sometimes we'll have a text, we'll negotiate as negotiating members, but the problem will be the parliamentary process, which is the process we are here today, that is the ratification in the preliminary hearing, because every treaty needs to be ratified before it can come to force. You find that we as officials sometimes have done most part of the work, but now it's left up to the parliamentary process. So that is the problem we are having with the African countries.
Just in relation to that, Chair, we have this year at least finally been able to begin negotiations with Senegal and Cameroon, which have long been on Treasury's list of priorities. So there is some progress on that, but I think really we don't have a backlog as such anymore. There are one or two priorities which we would still be looking at, but I wouldn't call it a backlog, Chair. There was a question on Article 26.
Just to remind all of us that this is one treaty that we've been dealing with, and we still have got quite a number, and time may not be on our side. I want us to avoid a situation where we pay all the attention on one agreement, and the rest we don't have time to talk about. So your comment should be very brief and short to the point, and I'll take Dr. George, and then we must move to the next one.
Thank you, Chair. Just the final question then was Article 26 on limitation of benefits in this treaty. All it's basically saying is that every country has anti-abuse provisions in its domestic law, for argument's sake, Section 103 in the South African Income Tax Act. We also have in our domestic law provisions dealing with controlled foreign corporations and the fact that we are allowed to tax them in South Africa. This treaty merely says that, this article merely says that nothing in this treaty will stop us from being able to use those anti-abuse provisions or our controlled foreign corporation rules. That's the stating of what's already accepted in the commentary. Thank you.
Dr. George?
Thank you, Chair. My question relates to all of the treaties. In the previous parliament, the issue was raised about the timing of the process and the sequencing. Now, my understanding that we are busy with a ratification process. Now, obviously, before you can ratify, you need to sign the treaty. Now, my question is, have the treaties been signed already, or are they still going to be signed? Thank you, Chair.
Just a follow-up on that one, so that you tackle the two questions simultaneously. Well, from your presentation, just in terms of the question of Dr. George, if what I read here is what transpires, you know, in practical terms, that before ratification by Parliament, treaties are signed. So the treaties, we are dealing with them because they are signed. The second question is the legislative process. You have just said in Africa or in the continent, the problem is the parliamentary processes. Now, with respect to these treaties that we are dealing with, particularly the two, is this a simultaneous process on our side and on their side? Where is the legislative processes on the other side?
It's simultaneous, but not exactly simultaneous. If it's difficult to say. Immediately signature happens. The two states then proceed with the ratification process, whatever is required under their particular constitution, as we would do in South Africa. So what I can say is that in both Germany and Mexico, preparations for ratification are underway. There will be a later protocol to this German DTA, and that protocol deals with the new exchange of information article, which has become acknowledged as a world standard in relation to exchange of information. But that will be a protocol that we still need to finalize the language on. That would still have to be signed. That would still have to come back to this committee for ratification as well. It's a good step forward, because currently the exchange of information between South Africa and Germany has been a little bit limited by the old treaty. There have been certain barriers. The new protocol will ensure that it's the latest standard. So, yes, the process is underway in both states. And, yes, in relation to Germany and Mexico, both these agreements have been signed. Thank you, Chair.
Dr. George?
Thank you, Chair. The reason why I asked the question was exactly to just point out that, for example, my colleague raised the point that was in this document. Now, it is already signed. So we're going through a signed document, we're just ratifying it. If we were not happy, for example, with a particular provision or something and we wanted it to be changed, what actually would that process be, bearing in mind that the counterparty has probably already signed it? Thanks, Chair.
Chair, yes. In a situation like that, we would go back and start negotiating a protocol to take account of serious issues. There's nothing to stop us doing.
Yeah. No, that's okay. But I think it's a matter that we need to look into Parliament. We have to look into that issue, so that we find a way that Parliament is brought on board much earlier, so that the inputs are carried into the discussions even before treaties are signed. Ratification is rubber stamping.
Sorry, Chair, without being seen as if you are rubber stamping, Parliament is brought on board on the during the preliminary hearing.
Okay.
Before the signature. Now, on the treaties that you're going to be taking now for preliminary hearing, is negotiated, it's not yet signed.
Okay.
So Parliament is brought on board. So if there are changes, then we can go back.
Okay.
and then we can change, because the preliminary hearing is before signature.
Thanks, Yanga. I think you've clarified that point. Meaning that what we are dealing with in terms of Mexico and Germany was tabled before. And then it's a continuation of a process that was started in the previous life of this committee. Okay. I think honorable members, you're on board. Do you get the sequencing of issues? Yeah. Now, honorable Madlamini earlier on did say we are relatively new committee members. But continuation is something that has to be there, with the exception of Dr. George, probably. You might have served before in this committee. I think it's quite clear, honorable members, particularly on this issue of Germany. Can we move to the next presentation?
Thank you, Chair. I'll try and be more concise. The first slide, of course, is identical to the introduction to Germany. The next slide deals with resident. What happens when countries work on a resident system of taxation is that the domestic law applies a definition of what is a resident of a contracting state. And because of the fact that these are or can be very wide definitions, for argument's sake, for an individual it would say if you're in my country for more than 183 days, you're a resident for tax purposes. On the other hand, our law also says that you still remain ordinarily resident in a country. In other words, it's a temporary absence, you would still be a resident. So you get often cases of dual residence where people are resident for tax purposes in more than one state. Now, in Article 4, which defines resident in these treaties, it throws you back to domestic law, and that creates the possibility of dual residence. You then have a tiebreaker rule, which says one of the states should have the sole right to call you its resident. In relation to companies, bodies, persons other than individuals in paragraph 3 of Article 4, that tiebreaker rule in this agreement says that the competent authorities shall by mutual agreement settle those questions of dual residence. But that if they are unable to come to a mutual agreement, then that person will remain outside the benefits of this particular agreement. And that's really important in that we're not looking at individuals. There are set rules for individuals. We are looking here at companies, and often the reason for dual residence for a company has something to do with schemes relating to taxation. And therefore, we find that with this kind of provision, dual residence doesn't often arise because companies sort out the issue themselves before it gets to this point. Paragraph 4 provides that a partnership or a trust is a resident of a contracting state only to the extent that the income it derives is subject to tax in that state. This is a normal principle, for argument's sake, in South Africa. We don't tax partnerships. We look through partnerships and we tax the individual partners, and therefore it's the items of income as opposed to the entity which is taxable. Article 5 deals with permanent establishment. Again, back to construction. In this particular agreement, once again, for building sites, construction, assembly or installation projects, together with supervisory activities in connection therewith, 12 months is the time limit. Paragraph 6 of Article 5 deals with insurance enterprises and says in this particular treaty, we use the provision from the UN which says you'll be deemed to have a permanent establishment in the other state if you collect premiums in the territory of that other state or insure risks situated therein through a dependent agent. Now, all treaties have a dependent agent provision which would catch this, but this is a specific provision which is included dealing directly with this particular issue of insurance through agents. does not apply to the company itself. Business profits, this is a force of attraction rule, and I don't know how quickly, I'll try and do it quickly. What normally happens is, if you have an enterprise of a contracting state doing business in the other state through a permanent establishment, what's taxable in that other state is the profits from the activities carried on in that permanent establishment. Mexico has long had a problem because, I'll say it, because they have a neighbor to the north of them where a lot of schemes happen. I didn't mention the name. So, what they use then is a force of attraction rule, which says if you have this enterprise with a branch in the other country, even if you do transactions outside the branch, those transactions should be linked automatically to that branch and taxed as such in that other country. This is something that Mexico is very strong on because of the fact that they have to deal with all these schemes which happen across the border from them. And therefore, this is a bottom line provision in their treaties. However, with us, they've agreed that they will only apply that force of attraction rule, if I could call it that, if they can show that it was in the scheme of tax avoidance or evasion, which is set out in paragraph 1 of Article 7. Article 9, dealing with associated enterprises, this is the article which allows us to combat the evil of transfer pricing. And paragraph 3 provides that paragraph 2, which forces one of the states to make a corresponding adjustment. Paragraph 1 says, if you find transfer pricing, you can adjust the profits upwards in your country. To eliminate double taxation, the other country then has to drop its profits, corresponding adjustment. Paragraph 3 says that corresponding adjustment shall not apply in cases of fraud, gross negligence, or willful default. With regard to dividends, the rate agreed with Mexico, and in fact the rate which is most common in all our treaties, is 5% for a shareholding of at least 10%, 10% for portfolio shareholdings. Article 11 interest, the source state is limited to 10% on the gross amount of interest paid to non-residents, while paragraph 8 provides that where you apply your thin capitalization rules and you recharacterize interest to dividend, then that dividend will be dealt with under Article 10, dealing with dividends as opposed to the interest article. Royalties, the source state has a limitation placed of 10%. They also have then a limitation of benefits under Article 21, and it provides that a person other than an individual, which is a resident of a contracting state, shall not be entitled under this agreement to relief from taxation in the other state unless certain conditions are met. The aim is to ensure that the benefits apply only to genuine residents of the two countries, being South Africa and Mexico. Assistance in collection, this article is included in the Mexican treaty, and as I said earlier, it works on a basis of reciprocity, that the one country may collect outstanding taxes on behalf of the other country. Just one word. It provides that you in your country should have done everything in your power to try to collect that debt before you ask the other country to do it. And it should be final in your country before you can ask the other country to collect on your behalf. In other words, it's gone through any court procedures, it's become final under law in your country. The protocol then contains a number of clarifications, once again, and explanations of provisions in the agreement, which are in line with normal treaty interpretation. In particular, rules of interpretation have been agreed, which ensure that a consistent approach is achieved, and this is really important in these international treaties, is consistent interpretation. Those are my comments on Mexico. Thank you, Chair.
Comments? Magamit?
Thank you, Chair. No, mine is not a comment, but it just really means to request the National Treasury to ensure that we've got a proper monitoring tool. Thank you.
Okay.
as far as this trip is concerned. Especially where there's the linkage of you leave. Because I was still going through my documents, then I couldn't get it well. And it makes me uncomfortable to know that there is that entity there, and it has to be linked with the other one. And then when we do the taxation, whatever profit that has been generated from that side, it has to go that side. So I think we need the monitoring there. We need to monitor. I mean, the treaties might be okay, but if we don't monitor it, we might lose the sight of what is happening there.
Chair, yes, I'd just like to add in relation to that ensuring compliance, of course, is always important, and point taken. Thank you.
I think if we don't have any more questions or suggestions in relation to this presentation, I would therefore request that we'll come back to this too, because I'm supposed to adopt a report for presentation, way of a resolution to the House. But because the Honourable Gordon has requested to be excused for the next 30 minutes, he's attending another Rules Committee meeting, but he'll be back. We'll only do that when he's back here. For now, we should continue to take the preliminary briefings on the following: Chile, Kenya, Lesotho, Sri Lanka, and Qatar.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. As you have answered, yes. As you have said before, after we've negotiated the treaty, we come to Parliament for the preliminary hearing, so that Parliament, if they've got concerns regarding maybe some of the aspects in the treaty and the language maybe used, then we can go back to our negotiating partners and say that we need to change this before the treaty can be signed. Also, it is important that even if the treaty has been signed, if one country thinks that maybe it has changed the legislation or wants to do something else, it can go to another party, and then the treaty is changed through the protocol. So the text treaties that have been negotiated but not yet signed today is Chile, Kenya, Lesotho, Sri Lanka, and Qatar. You find that the negotiations took place some time ago, but they have not yet been finalized, because it takes some time even to finalize the negotiations amongst ourselves. I'll go to slide 3, the reasons for the South Africa-Chile Tax Treaty. This is the rationale that the Honorable Chair asked, like, why do we do a treaty? What do we look at? With regard to the South African-SA-Chile Tax Treaty, the reason for the treaty is to strengthen economic relations between South Africa and Chile and to increase South Africa's tax treaty network in the Latin American region. As you may note, we only have tax treaty with Brazil in the Latin American region. Mexico, we are still busy with that. We don't have a treaty yet with Argentina, so we don't have a footprint there. And it is, as you have said, that we look at the major trading partners and you say, no, we want to have a tax treaty with that country, and then we go and propose, or that country will come to us. The investment flows between the two countries are: total investments by Chile into South Africa was $16 million in 2005, $15 million in 2006, $37 million in 2007. Investments by South Africa into Chile were $205 million in 2005, $286 million in 2006, and $325 million in 2007. And South African companies operating in Chile are Anglo, Dimension Data, SAP, Miller, and Tiger Brands. It's important to know that you'll find that there's a time lag in the number of investment and trade flows, because we get the investment flows from South African Reserve Bank, and the trade flows, we get them from DTI. So sometimes it may happen that you don't have the number for last year one, because they are still updating that. And the trade flows between the two countries are as follows. Exports to Chile were $341 million in 2005, $410 million in 2006. $426 million in 2007, $530 million in 2008. And imports to Chile imports from Chile were 335.9 million in 2005, 526 million in 2006, 750 million in 2007, and 1 billion in 2008. I'm afraid that the honorable member will ask, why are we importing less than imports? But it's how business is done. It's sad because it affects our balance of account, trade balances. Okay, coming to the Kenya tax treaty. This is the most awaited treaty by our business partners. We've been trying to negotiate with Kenya. There is a lot of trade relations between the two countries. And the reason for the Kenya treaty, we wanted to also to promote South Africa as a regional center for Africa. The investment flows between the two countries are as follows. Total investments by Kenya into South Africa were 1.2 billion in 2005, 1.6 billion in 2006, 987 million in 2007. We haven't got explanation from the Reserve Bank why did the investment stake drop in 2007 from 1.6 billion to 987 million. Investments by South Africa into Kenya were 120 million in 2005, 204 million in 2006, 969 million in 2007. And South African companies operating in Kenya are Afrox, Alexander Forbes, Dimension Data, SAP, Miller, ShopRite, MetroCash. You find that when you go to Kenya, you just see South African companies. And the trade flows between the two countries are as follows. Exports from South Africa to Kenya were 2.9 billion in 2005, 3.2 billion in 2006, 4.6 billion in 2007. And imports from Kenya were 203 million in 2005, 171 million in 2006, 205 million in 2007. It's nicer here because South Africa is exporting more to Kenya than we are importing from them. Coming to the Lesotho tax treaty. This is not the first treaty that South Africa has to Lesotho. Our first treaty came into force in 1997. But we have said during that time, South Africa has not yet progressed in our domestic law. You find that after a country has made major changes in the domestic law, it would want to renegotiate its existing tax treaty. So in 1999, South Africa introduced a residence-based system of taxation and introduced a capital gains tax. So we saw it's necessary that we have to do the negotiations with Lesotho so that we can update our treaty so it to reflect the part of the domestic law. Also, Lesotho is a member of SADC, and I've said that there is in terms of SADC investment protocol, we must have tax treaties amongst each other. The investment flows between the two countries are total investments by Lesotho in South Africa were 3.1 billion in 2005, 3.8 billion in 2006, 4 billion in 2007. Investment by South Africa into Lesotho were 991 million in 2005, 1.4 billion in 2006, 1.3 billion in 2007. You can see that the Lesotho are investing more in South Africa, but there isn't at least the investment flows. These are portfolio investments, and South Africa has got more money markets than Lesotho. So hence you find that Lesotho people will invest in our shares, will invest in our banks, and all will buy bonds in South Africa, more than South Africans investing in Lesotho. And the trade flows between the two countries are as follows. Exports from South Africa to Lesotho were 5 billion in 2003, 5 billion in 2004, 8 billion in 2005, 7 billion in 2006, 8 billion in 2007. While imports from Lesotho to South Africa were 1.7 billion in 2005, 83 million in 2006, 15 million in 2007, 738 million in 2008. And also this helps our trade, our balance of account trade deficit here, because South Africa is exporting more to Lesotho than we are getting imports from Lesotho. Also, we must stress that this tax treaty is also important in terms of individuals. It doesn't only help business, but treaty also helps business and individuals because we share a border with Lesotho. You find that there is a regular cross-border movement between the two countries in terms of individuals, and we exchange tourists, and also students from Lesotho are studying in South Africa, and students from South Africa are studying to Lesotho, so this treaty also helps in that. Coming to the Sri Lanka, I think this was negotiated in 2003 or 2004. Yes. But negotiations were not finalized because we can negotiate and you go back to your country and you find that you want to do some certain changes, and then hence it's only now that we are doing the preliminary hearings. The reason for this treaty is to strengthen economic ties between the two countries, and South Africa is the most important trading partner for Sri Lanka in the Southern African region. Investments by Sri Lanka into South Africa were $261 million in 2005, $261 million in 2006, and $262 million in 2007. Investment by South Africa in Sri Lanka were $12 million in 2005, $13 million in 2006, and $13 million in 2007. Coming to the trade flows, exports from South Africa to Sri Lanka were $185 million in 2005, $155 million in 2006, $183 million in 2007, and $279 million in 2008. While imports were $77 million in 2005, $103 million in 2006, $138 million in 2007, and $150 million in 2008. Also, when you look at these trade figures, it helps South Africa because we are exporting more than we are importing. Coming to the Qatar Treaty, the reason for the treaty was to also advance economic relations between the two countries. And Qatar is of great importance to South Africa as it has oil reserves of 15.21 billion barrels and natural gas. Also, we've been told that South African community is growing in Qatar, hence there is also South Africa social community which assists newcomers in Qatar. So there is also a cross-border movement of individuals between the two countries. Coming to the investment flows, total investment by Qatar in South Africa was $46 million in 2005, $3 million in 2006, and $49 million in 2007. Also, Qatar Investment Authority has invested in the PNE Infrastructure Management Fund, which in turn invests in infrastructure development both in Africa and South Africa. You find that with these Arab countries, they've got their sovereign fund, whereby government invests in other countries in a certain fund. So it's also important to have relations with them because they've got a lot of cash that they want to invest in the country. Investment by South African companies in Qatar include, in 2006, we understand that Sasol and Qatar Petroleum entered into a deal for a joint venture gas to liquid facility. And also, we know that Marine Robert, which is a South African company, is operating there. It built a stadium in Qatar. The trade flows between the two countries are as follows. Exports from South Africa to Qatar were $79 million in 2005, $149 million in 2006, $263 million in 2007, $436 million in 2008. While imports from Qatar to South Africa were $930 million in 2005, $1.2 billion in 2006, $747 million in 2007, $1.4 billion in 2008. Yeah, you find that we're importing more from Qatar maybe because of the natural gas and oil. That's all. I'll hand over to Ron so that he can do the technical aspect.
South Africa, Qatar, once again follows the OECD model convention, aspects of the United Nations. Differences are, and the interest articles of interest are as follows. Article 5, permanent establishment. Paragraph 2 of that article gives you examples of what could prima facie be permanent establishment. So for argument's sake, they talk about an office, a branch, a warehouse, etc. This particular paragraph is extended in this agreement to include as examples a warehouse where storage facilities are provided to parties other than the enterprise, a sale outlet, a farm, plantation or orchard. It doesn't really mean anything because even if it's put in as an example of what could be a PE in paragraph 2, it still has to meet the basic definition of paragraph 1. So this is it's not an exhaustive definition, it's just by way of illustration. Paragraph 3 of Article 5 dealing with PE in this particular agreement, building site construction, assembly or installation project, supervisory activity, the time limit is more than 6 months. Also in Article 5, we have a deeming provision which says that if you furnish services in the other country, including consultancy services, by employees or other people engaged, then that's deemed to be a fixed place of business. And that test is based on physical presence of more than 183 days as opposed to a fixed place of business. Also, that same rule applies to the performance of professional services and in respect of periods or periods exceeding 183 days physical presence in the other state. These are two paragraphs which South Africa has brought into its model for the last 5 or 6 years at least, because we don't have an article dealing with independent personal services anymore. We follow the international trend of not having that article, but instead dealing with independent personal services as business profits. If I could just explain, independent personal services related to fees earned by people like doctors and dentists and lawyers and your professional people, engineers, etc. They used to have an article all by themselves. All we've done now is move the taxing rights which were under that article to business profits, and therefore we also include them in permanent establishment. Article 8, dealing with shipping and air transport, once again, profits from the use or rental of containers used for in the transport in international traffic of goods or merchandise are taxable only in the resident state of the enterprise which operates them. Article 10, dividends, the familiar withholding rates which we normally try and get, 5% for a shareholding of at least 10%, 10% in respect of portfolio investment, interest article, taxable only in the state of residence of the beneficial owner of that interest, royalties, there's a 5% withholding rate in the source state. Article 15, dealing with director's fees, extends the provisions of that article to officials in top-level managerial positions. And all it's doing is saying that the country in which the company which pays these salaries, as it would in relation to director's fees, that company will, as an expense, claim the fees paid to its directors, the fees paid to seconded top-level managers, and it's saying that the state which allows the deduction should have a right of taxation. It doesn't say shall tax, it just says that state may tax it. So it's up to domestic law again as to whether you do or do not tax. Those are the comments on Qatar. Chair.
Any question on this one? Let's move on.
Right, the next one I have, the chair is Sri Lanka. Article 5, permanent establishment. One of the principles we have in permanent establishment is that if the activities which occur in the permanent establishment are merely preparatory or auxiliary, then the profit which could be attributed to preparatory or auxiliary activities would be nothing or extremely negligible. So paragraph 4 of Article 5 introduces a number of items which are regarded to be preparatory or auxiliary by nature and therefore would not have profit attributed to them. One of those is delivery. However, the United Nations model considers delivery to be more closely linked to sales, and therefore they don't regard delivery as being preparatory or auxiliary. We have followed the UN model provision in this particular treaty so that delivery is excluded from auxiliary activities envisaged in both paragraphs 4 and 5 relating to PE and dependent agents. Construction in this particular article, in this particular treaty, is once again 183 days or 6 months. Furnishing of services and the performance of professional services as the same concept that we had in the treaty with Qatar, but here the time periods are 90 days in any 12-month period. Also, in relation to an installation or drilling rig or ship used for exploration or development of natural resources, a permanent establishment is deemed to exist after 90 days. Business profits, it's the same principle that Sri Lanka insists on in relation to a force of attraction rule, as I explained in the Mexican treaty. Clearly, they have different neighbors. But once again, we were able to negotiate into this treaty that they would only use the force of attraction rule if they could show that a scheme of tax avoidance existed. Paragraph 3, if you look at the treaty, uses the United Nations model, paragraph 3, which deals with what expenses should be allowed as a deduction in determining the profits of that permanent establishment. It's twice as long, Chair, as the OECD model words, but it's a matter of interpretation. The UN decided in drafting that paragraph 3 that they would be specific as to what should not be allowed, whereas the OECD model says this is how you interpret it, and the interpretation is in fact the same. The UN just actually reduces it to writing. Article 8, shipping and air transport. Air transport is taxable only in the state of residence, but in this treaty, source state taxation of shipping is allowed. And that taxation is based only on income from a source in that state. So if a Sri Lankan ship, for argument's sake, calls into Cape Town and it loads passengers or goods in Cape Town, then the source is South Africa, we would retain a right of taxation. However, that taxation is reduced by 50% on a reciprocal basis. So South African ships going to Sri Lanka would be subject to the same tax, but with the same reduction of 50%. Associated enterprises, once again, the corresponding adjustment in the other state will not be made or does not have to be made in cases where it can be shown there was fraud, willful default, or neglect in relation to these transfer pricing schemes. Dividends, the dividend rate in South Africa, Sri Lanka DTA is 10% in all cases. Interest, 10%. Royalties, 10% in the source state. Article 17, once again, Sri Lanka had an issue with social security system, and in this particular treaty, we follow the principle that the state which pays should have the sole right of taxation. This is not a major issue at this stage in South Africa because our social security payments, such as they are, fall below the limit of taxation. Article 19 deals with teachers and researchers. And what we try and do in these treaties is also to try and provide some kind of incentive to cultural and educational exchanges. And what we say in relation to teachers and researchers is that if they visit the other state for a period of less than 2 years, and provided that their remuneration comes from outside the state being visited, then the state that's being visited should not have a right of taxation. That remains with the state of residence of that person. So if a South African professor visits Sri Lanka to teach at a university for a period of less than 2 years, and his remuneration, it comes from outside Sri Lanka, then Sri Lanka would give up their right of taxation. It would remain with South Africa, which would be his state of residence, and vice versa, of course. With regard to other income, in all our treaties, we use the United Nations model version of other income, which says to the source state, in other words, the state in which this other income arises, that they should also have a taxing right with regard to these items of other income. We were asked by Sri Lanka to reduce the UN model to one simple paragraph, which simply said other income may be taxed at the state of source. The end result is the same as we would have with the normal drafting of the international model, so we agreed to that. In the protocol, there's a paragraph clarifying that independent personal services income would fall under business profits under Article 7. This was a request from Sri Lanka. It was the first treaty where they'd ever followed the path of not having a specific article dealing with independent personal services. As I said, that's doctors, lawyers, dentists, engineers, etc. And that it should be regarded as business profits. So for clarification for their taxpayers, they wanted a paragraph in the protocol which spelled out exactly that this income now fell under business profits. The issue of tax bearing, matching credits where there's economic incentive programs, was not debated in our negotiation with Sri Lanka because of the fact that South Africa has a participation exemption in relation to dividends coming back to South African shareholders. Sri Lanka agreed to drop their demand for tax-bearing provision, but said that if we changed our participation exemption in future, that we would agree to then sit down with them and renegotiate. It's like a most favored nation provision, which says that if things change in the future, we need to talk. Those are the comments on Sri Lanka too.
Madam,
thank you, Chair. It's not a question. Maybe it's to request the National Treasury Chair that if they can just apply their mind again on the domestic policy regarding the risk shared on the shipping, on the Article Number 8, because of that a tax reduction of the 50% on the Sri Lanka. And then I am requesting the National Treasury to look on our domestic policy on the risk shared, because it might affect us where we ship, and then goods come to Durban, and then we share it with the FedEx, and then whether there is that tax, 50% tax deduction. I don't know if you understand. I don't know if you do understand what I'm saying. Oh, I have to make myself.
Yeah.
There's another question. No. We like your eagerness to take on questions.
I also want to check on this provision of collection. Collection of taxes on behalf of each other by the state. Why? Because in other countries I can see there's no such provision. What does that imply? But at the same time, maybe what might have caused that we don't have such an arrangement. Because my opinion is it's the most acceptable arrangement for all countries.
Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. With relation to the first question, I don't know whether I misunderstood as well, but what we're talking here is an income tax imposed under the Income Tax Act on the shipping company. I don't think that tax is shared with SADC. It's not like the customs union. So I don't think that's an issue for SADC as such. It's an issue for SAR, because what we're talking about is if a ship comes in and it loads goods, what we're taxing is the transport, not the goods themselves. It's the income they earn from transporting those goods or passengers, and that's taxable under the Income Tax Act. There's no sharing with SADC.
Yes, as Ron has said, what happens is that you may find that maybe in the previous treaties, income of an aeroplane or a ship, income of a shipping will be taxable in the country of residence. But in the case of Sri Lanka, they want a shared right of taxation, that is income from shipping, not from the transportation of goods. I understand your concern that if it's goods, we are not talking about the goods and in terms of SACU agreement, we are not talking about the goods from the ship.
we're talking about if maybe the, what's the name, the name of the shipping company, Mediterranean Shipping Company, and Mediterranean Shipping Company is transporting goods. We're talking about Mediterranean Shipping Company itself, not the goods being transferred by Mediterranean Company. And sometimes you'll find that because Sri Lanka is relatively in the coast, they derive most of their income from the shipping industry.
The second question on collection, I think we agree from a negotiating team point of view, as a matter of policy, that it's really, really important. The problem is that you require also a base in your domestic law which enables you to enter into this provision in the international agreement. Now, for us, that's not a problem because we have Section 93 in our Income Tax Act which says in an international agreement we can enter into an assistance in collection provision. But not all countries have that at this stage. And in relation to the international models, it was only included for the first time in an international model in the OECD in 2005. The UN committee only approved this for inclusion in the UN model in 2008. So this is something for the future. It is something that South Africa proposes in every single negotiation that we have because we think it's important, and I agree with you on that. But the other state can't always also agree to it, and therefore, if there's no reciprocity, well, so be it.
Good. I think we should move. Step? All right. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. This is Kenya, and just for the start, we've been trying to get
your mic. Technology has not started rejecting you. Use it until it rejects.
It's my mind that's not so good, Chair. Technology is probably fine.
I don't know why you are so fast in terms of thinking. Because I've got such a friendly committee engagement, we have not started putting on the other side. So your mind must be fully, fully rested on this matter. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. What I wanted to say about Kenya is we tried for many, many years and our business really asked us, please, we need a treaty with Kenya, as my colleague said. So for us to actually get them to the table and to get a treaty done was something that made us sort of happy. Article 5, dealing with permanent establishment. Once again, the periods here in relation to the furnishing of services and which is deemed to be a permanent establishment where there is no fixed place of business but there's just the presence of people doing the job for the enterprise is 183 days. The building site construction, assembly, installation project, 6 months. Also in this agreement, Kenya wanted to exclude delivery. In other words, they're following the UN model which says delivery is not an auxiliary activity. As I said before, it's not a major issue because if you look at any business process, manufacture, sale, etc., that's where the profit's going to be allocated. Delivery is going to have a very negligible effect on as to what kind of profit should be attached to that activity. Also here we have the United Nations provision dealing with an insurance enterprise, and it merely says if you're insuring risks in the other territory through a dependent agent situated in that other territory, then that other territory should be able to tax you. That's a normal provision. You can do that without this provision, but the UN includes it in its model. We have no difficulty in including it in our treaties. This is also a treaty where we have source state taxation of shipping. Once again, there's a reduction of 50% on the taxation in terms of the treaty. Profits from the operation of ships and aircraft in international traffic shall also include profits derived from the rental of, on a bareboat basis of ships or aircraft used in international traffic, but only if it's incidental to the main business. The main business covered in Article 8, Chair, is operating in international traffic. In other words, transport of goods and persons in international traffic. That does not normally include rental. But what we're looking at here is a situation where a company might be using its ships, for argument's sake, to transport goods. It ends up in a port with nothing to transport, and therefore, as an incidental to its normal operation, rents that ship out to someone else just for a short voyage or a short transport contract. Although that rental is not normally covered under Article 8, we say if it's incidental, in other words, it's not the main business to rent out ships, then we will continue to deal with it under Article 8. Article 10, dealing with dividends, the rate is 10% in the source state on all cases. Interest, 10% in all cases. Royalties, 10% in all cases. Kenya also asked for social security system payments to be taxable only in the state which pays the pension. This is not contrary to our policy. We agree to that. We also have an article dealing with professors and teachers in this particular treaty. Once again, it's a limited visit, not more than 2 years, and only in respect of remuneration from outside the state being visited. So it's the same principle that we had in the previous one. We also have a paragraph which says that if that teacher or professor is in that state, in the visited state, for purposes of research, this exemption will not apply if the research is for the private benefit of specific persons. In other words, it must be for the benefit of the general public. In this treaty, I'm pleased to say, Chair, that we do have an assistance in the collection of taxes article included under Article 27. This is a really fairly standard treaty, not too many differences, and that's the only comments I have on Kenya.
Yeah, honorable members, we are nearer home, Kenya. Okay. I take it straightforward. This presentation is straightforward. There are no complications. Members would probably at some point look into detail or the details of this preliminary briefing and treaties that we are presenting. Maybe, Ron, we should take another one if we still have.
Thank you, Chair. This is the agreement with Chile. Some of the provisions I'm going to mention here, I've mentioned already in relation to other countries like Mexico. I mention them again. It just so happens that they're not provisions that we normally have in South Africa's treaties, but it does not go against the principles. And that is exactly the case with paragraph 3 of Article 4 dealing with resident, where we say again, an item of income, profit, or gain derived through a person that is fiscally transparent shall be considered to be derived by a resident of a contracting state to the extent that the item is treated for the purposes of the laws of that state as income, profit, or gain of a resident. That speaks directly to partnerships, because a partnership, as we've said, is fiscally transparent. We go right through it and we say, who are the partners? That's who we want to tax. And what we say here is simply that if the partner is a resident of your state, then the treaty will apply to him in respect to that item of income which he receives from the partnership. That's fully in line with our domestic law. Permanent establishment, the periods agreed to with Chile, building site, construction, assembly, more than 6 months. We have both the furnishing of services through employees and the performance of professional services, those are the doctors and the engineers, etc., the lawyers, 183 days in any 12-month period. Article 10 dealing with dividends, the withholding rates there are 5%, but the shareholding has to be at least 25% and 15% in respect to portfolio investment. With regard to interest, Chair, in this treaty we had a dual rate of limitation in the source state. We had a low rate of 5%, a lower rate, should I say, of 5% in respect of interest derived from loans granted by banks and insurance companies on bonds and securities, sales on credit in respect of machinery and equipment. All other cases of interest, 15% limitation in the source state. Also, in relation to royalties, we had a dual rate, a lower rate of 5% on the gross amount for the use of or the right to use any industrial, commercial or scientific equipment, 10% in respect of the gross amount of royalties in all other cases. The note here, Chair, is simply this. Chile regards equipment rental to be a royalty, which of course is not the case under South African domestic law. For us, that's business profit. So in agreeing to the inclusion of that equipment as a royalty in this particular treaty, we asked them to give us a more favorable rate in the source state, and they dropped it to 5%. Article 13, capital gains. Gains derived by a resident of a contracting state from the alienation of shares or other rights representing the capital of a company or comparable interests or rights in any person that is resident of other state may be taxed in that other state. So here, gains from the alienation of these shares or rights may be taxed in the state in which the company is situated. Once again, this is in line with South African domestic law. Article 17, dealing with pensions, and this refers to alimony and other maintenance payments. And chairs, you know, in South Africa, it's a tax-neutral thing. The person who pays the alimony or maintenance, it's paid from after-tax income, and the person who receives it is not taxable on that alimony. Now, of course, it's different in Chile, because whoever pays the alimony gets a deduction, and the person who receives it pays tax. So to get past that provision and ensure that a South African would not be subjected to after-tax payment here, but the person receiving it in Chile would be taxed on it, we said if alimony is not allowed as a deduction to the taxpayer, as is the case in South Africa, then it may be taxed only in the state of the payer. So we get rid of that possibility of someone being literally punched by two tax authorities. Exchange of information. Paragraph 3 we managed to bring into this treaty, which says that, and it's part of the new standard on exchange of information. If information is requested by a contracting state, we say that state should go out and get that information, even though they have no tax interest themselves. So if a country comes to me and says, I need this and this information on this taxpayer, I can't turn around and say, hey, you know what, I've got no tax interest on this, therefore I'm not going to go and get it. That's specifically outlawed in terms of the latest exchange of information provisions. That paragraph is in this particular treaty. What is missing from this treaty, and which is something that we will be following up, Chair, is that Chile has now also given a commitment to the OECD that it will follow the latest standards on exchange of information. So I think, Chair, we would say to this committee that we will be going back to Chile and saying, we would like to bring in the latest exchange of information article as currently accepted in the world internationally. So there might be a change to this one. The miscellaneous rules with respect to pool investment accounts or refunds that are subject to remittance tax, they are required to be administered by a resident in Chile. Chile should still be allowed to impose a tax on those remittances. This is a solely Chilean issue. They have these pooled investment funds where people can invest on a pool basis in Chile, but it has to be administered by a resident of Chile. And all they're saying is we want to retain our taxation rights on that. Article 27, also under miscellaneous rules, Chile has foreign investment statutes which allows for election of a fixed rate of tax for a period of 10 years. So if you invest in Chile under this particular foreign investment statute, you can agree with them what your rate of tax will be. What we say here is that nothing in the convention shall affect or change what Chile have agreed with that particular investor. Article 27 deals with contributions to a pension fund under miscellaneous rules, and we're looking there at someone who's seconded from one country to another. So for argument's sake, if you have a South African working for Company A in South Africa and they second him to work in Chile, and let's say he's going to be there for 2 or 3 years, he would probably like to continue contributing to his pension fund in South Africa. However, that pension fund would not be a recognized pension fund in Chile, and the opposite would also apply. So what we say in this treaty is he can continue to contribute to the pension fund, and Chile, in taxing his salary while he works there, will allow him a deduction for that pension contribution, provided the fund is similar to a pension fund which would be approved in Chile, and vice versa. It works on the basis of reciprocity. Those are the comments on Chile.
Comments?
Honorable?
Yes, Chair,
not the same, very interesting in the sense that in Chile there's provision for miscellaneous aspect. You know, that's something that we meet in other countries, which shows, I mean, how different these countries, I mean, are, but also how environment in each and every country might result in different treaties being developed. You know, appreciation of the ADR acknowledgement, in fact.
Yes. Go on, let's proceed. I think this is the last one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Once again, Chair, this was a renegotiation. We had entered into a treaty with the Suti in about 97, but there were certain issues which needed to be really revisited, in particular the fact that we didn't deal with capital gains under the 97 treaty, because at that stage neither state imposed a tax on capital gains. Subsequent to that, of course, it became an issue. Comments with regard to Lesotho, and I'm starting to repeat myself, and I apologize, but that's the way it is. Article 4, residence. We have the same agreement on dual residence of companies with Lesotho as I explained to you in, I think it was the treaty with Mexico, where we said if there's dual residence of companies, then the two states shall by mutual agreement decide which state has the sole right to claim that company as its resident. If the two states cannot agree, then that company is excluded from any relief or exemption from tax provided by the agreement. And as I said earlier, we've found that when companies are faced with that situation, they normally sort out the problem themselves, because in effect, if you look at a company, if you're looking at dual residence of a company, that problem is created by the company itself in most cases. Article 5, permanent establishment. The term with the Lesotho is 6 months. And also in this agreement, furnishing of services through employees or direct performance of professional services, the lawyers and doctors, it's 90 days in any 12-month period, but 6 months for a building site or construction project. Article 7, business profits, paragraph 3 would look very different from most of our treaties because it uses the UN model. As I pointed out earlier, Chair, it's just that the UN has used lengthy drafting. The interpretation of that particular article is the same in both the OECD and the United Nations model. Article 8, with regard to international transport, we include also, we go beyond ships and aircraft. I could say for obvious reasons with Lesotho, because there's not too much shipping, I guess, between South Africa and Lesotho. What there is, however, Chair, is particularly road transport. So in this particular agreement, we've extended those provisions to rail or road transport because there's a lot of that going across the border. And the principle remains the same, that the companies which are operating these transport vehicles in international traffic are taxable only in their state of residence. And that would include rental of those modes of transport, provided it's incidental to the actual operation of transport in international traffic. Article 10, dividends. The dividend rate in South Africa, Lesotho DTA, 10% if there's a shareholding of at least 10%, 15% in respect of all others. There's an agreement. Lesotho imposes a branch profits tax. A branch, of course, cannot declare a dividend. A branch remits its profits back across the border. So what Lesotho does is to place it on an equal footing with a subsidiary company, which would have a withholding tax when it paid a dividend. They say when the branch profits is remitted, there should be an equal withholding tax on those branch profits to level the playing field between the two. That, of course, is a discriminatory issue under treaties. So we have to deal with it in the treaty, and we've said that provided it's limited to 10%, the agreement will not prevent a contracting state from imposing such branch profits tax. That 10% is equal, of course, then to the 10% on the dividends, which is the limitation for shareholding of at least 10%. Interest, 10% in the source state. Royalties, 10% in the source state. In relation to the Lesotho, as we have done with a number of countries within the SADC economic community, we've agreed that technical fees arising in a contracting state and paid to a resident of the other contracting state may be taxed in that other state, in the state from which the payment is made for those technical fees. And we're talking there about consultancy, management fees, etc. However, what we have done is to negotiate that the domestic law rate in Lesotho, which is applied as a withholding tax on these payments, should be reduced to 10% if the beneficial owner of those technical fees is a resident of South Africa. Dealing with entertainers and sports persons, Article 7 has the normal provision that where the entertainer or sports person is exercising his activities in the other state, that other state has an immediate right of taxation in respect to the remuneration for those activities. This treaty goes a little bit further in paragraph 3, and it has a lot to do, I guess, with the proximity of ourselves to Lesotho, and says, if the visit to the other state is supported wholly or mainly by public funds of the first mentioned state. So for argument's sake, if a South African cultural group went across the border on a visit to perform in Lesotho, and that visit was funded wholly or mainly from public funds, then Lesotho would say, well, I'm not going to tax. Taxation should remain only in the state of residence. Article 18, pensions, deals with public security. Social security under a public scheme is taxable only in the state which makes the payment. We have a normal professors and teachers article with Lesotho, which is understandable, particularly in regard of our proximity. Once again, 2-year limitation. Remuneration must be derived from outside the host state, the state being visited by the professor or teacher. And if he's doing research, if it's for private benefit, no exemption. It has to be for the general public. In this agreement, there is a tax-sparing provision. What it comes down to, Chair, is this. Lesotho would have an economic incentive program, which would say that, like a tax holiday scheme, which says if you're going to build a factory in a certain part of Lesotho and you're going to create X thousand of jobs and it has to be in a particular area of the country, then you can have a tax holiday for 5 years. The problem is, if a South African company goes across the border and builds this branch, this factory as a branch, South Africa is going to end up taxing the income, because we are the state of residence and we have an unlimited right of taxation on worldwide income. So all that happens is Lesotho gives up the tax, South Africa scores by not having to give a credit for any Lesotho tax, and therefore the benefit is of this economic incentive ends up in South Africa instead of in the hands of the company which actually built the factory. So what you need here is what we call a tax-sparing provision, which says that when South Africa taxes the foreign profit, the Lesotho profit of its branch, we should allow as a credit the amount of tax which would have been paid in Lesotho had it not been for that economic incentive. And then a tax holiday scheme actually works. Now, this is something which is... which is something we negotiate within the Southern African Development Community, and in particular we limit the kind of projects which should qualify for this tax sparing. And I want to jump to the protocol, which clarifies under paragraph 2 of the protocol clarifies that paragraph 3 of article 23 will apply, this tax-sparing provision will not apply in respect of financial intermediation activities such as banking and insurance. It shall not apply in respect of the licensing of intellectual property. It shall not apply in respect of shell businesses which are not engaged in substantive business operations, and it will not apply in respect of passive income, interest, royalties, dividends. In other words, we're looking here, Chair, at bricks and cement projects like factories, etc., etc., places of production. Article 27, Lesotho and South Africa have agreed to the assistance in collection of taxes. Happy to know that, because there's a lot going on across the border. And then we have a most favoured nation provision in paragraph 1 of the article. We tried to get the best favourable rates we could with Lesotho, and I think we did. In fact, I know we did. But what we did say was, Lesotho, if in the future you ever agree in another treaty to better rates than you've given South Africa, because of our close relationship, then those better rates should also be given to us as a matter of good neighbourliness. And that's my comments on the city.
Thank you. Comments, honourable members? Who's going to buy us lunch? There's a phone that is ringing here. Okay. I think colleagues and representatives of Treasury and staff, it's quite clear that this is a very important subject for our country.
your presentation were into categories. One is the overall thrust, the intended outcomes of this policy. Obviously, facilitation of trade to the benefit of South Africa and the trading partner at the same time, mutual benefits. Now, I would want to assume knowledge on behalf of the committee members here that in terms of the strategic objectives of the policies, we are at one. But there's still a lot more that needs to be done at the technical level for us. That too. Get closer to the processes itself at the technical level. I was just thinking here and looking at my colleagues on the left here that, you know, to be a public representative and especially to be a parliamentarian, it's like the case. We have to oversee very, very big departments with very complex departments and compartments and fully staffed. Each compartment in Treasury, in SARS, is a fully complemented unit that does its own research. And these ordinary members here, they must comprehend with that complex presentations and so on and so forth. Now, clearly, the first presentations where you need a decision on we have to make that decision as a committee on behalf of Parliament, because this treaties have been referred to us by Parliament for consideration and approval back to the House, the plenary itself. It's a matter that we'll be able to deal with on our own. The second set of issues that I think we need to agree on is on the preliminaries, this presentation that you've just made. I must say the office my friend on the other side, Cindy, not Zarina, you do provide us with documentation in time. But because of our heavy schedule and activities of the committee, sometimes we don't even have time to look at this discussion documents themselves or presentation before we take your presentation. On the preliminaries, I just wanted to check with you, Ron and Yanga. What are the time frames? When are you supposed to go back? When do you think this treatise would have to be ratified, the last presentation? That will determine what the committee should do between now and that time. Because we don't want, you see, Honorable George, Dr. George, was in the previous committee on the treaties that are supposed to be ratified, both in the case of Mexico and Germany. He appeared not to be aware at what point did they make an input. It means even at the stage of the prelims, the committee, the previous committee, did not engage fully with the content of the subject matter in front of the committee. Maybe the manner in which we treat this presentations, and the manner in which we
formalize our processes. Now, if we can have some sort of an idea in terms of time frames with regard to this preliminary treatise or briefings, we will then be able to then say before that time, as a committee, we'll have to look into the technical aspect much deeper and make our own comments to strengthen, because it's about strengthening the negotiating team. These are trade negotiations, basically. It's not just taxation. It's about trade facilitation and so on and so forth. If you just give us clarity on that, so that we are able to deal with that issue from the side of the committee secretariat and so on and so forth, we are able to have our own program to say, at some point, before you conclude the negotiations on the other side and come back for ratification, we should have engaged once more. Take into consideration the difficulties of time, but we have to do it one or the other.
Chair, in terms of the time frame, I'm not sure I'm entirely clear on this, but in practice what would happen is as soon as a bunch of officials at our level have reached consensus on a text, the first step we then do is we take it to the law advisors at both the Department of Justice and Foreign Affairs, so that they look at it from a domestic law point of view and from an international law point of view. And once we've got their comments and they've accepted that there's not a major train smash or something that we've done, then we come straight to you for a preliminary hearing. And there's no definite time limit. Yes, in some cases it might be relatively urgent in relation to state visits, like for argument's sake, the president and ministers going to Angola or wherever, that we would need to ask the committee, please, would you mind doing a preliminary, because there's a possibility of signature during the state visit. But normally, we have time enough after we've gone through the law advisors to follow the normal process and put this in front of your committee chair and get the preliminary comments. And we have enough time that if we need to go back to the other country and say, well, we need to address this issue or that issue, and let's do it before signature. Of course, once we've done that preliminary process here, then comes signature. And Chair, that can also take time, because signature is done only by ministers. And ministers aren't always available or travelling to the particular country that we've negotiated with. So sometimes signature is delayed for sheer matters of convenience of visits by ministers. So I don't think that there would be any kind of problem in giving you and your committee chair sufficient time to look at these, except in isolated cases in which we'd ask for your indulgence.
Is that okay, committee members?
All right.
Ron, we don't expect that in the case of Kenya, Lesotho, and Chile, and others, these things are going to happen simultaneously. You know, these are different countries, and the discussions are taking place at a different times. But those that may actually be in the advanced stage, because you see, what I'm trying to avoid is a situation where this preliminary briefing constitutes an input by this committee, and therefore the next round is going to be ratification. I am not quite certain that we have actually delved with the technical aspect more deeper than we'd like to actually do ourselves.
Hence, I was asking this time frames and so on and so forth. But having said that, I think let's leave it there. We will then deal with this documentation that we have on our own. And then if there's more additional information that we need to provide through my office, we'll then, and since this office, communicate with you on these issues. Yeah, that's the point that I was just raising on this prelims. If we agree with that approach, then we pass this part. We go back to the first portion of ratification. And it's a formal process because we need to put it on record as a committee that we have looked into these matters and this is our decision or recommendation. And because of that, I would formalize this process by actually reading the report, the committee report, so that we all adopt it in your presence here. The first one is, the biggest trading partner in terms of today, which is Germany. This will be the first one. Trade volumes does show that we are really doing business with this country. We say the Standing Committee on Finance, having considered the request for approval by Parliament of the agreement between the Republic of South Africa and the Federal Republic of Germany for the avoidance of double taxation with respect to taxes on income and on capital, recommends that the House, in terms of Section 231, subsection 2 of the Constitution, approve the said agreement. Agreed? Unanimous. Then the second ratification, the Standing Committee on Finance, having considered the request for approval by Parliament of the agreement between the Republic of South Africa and the United Mexican States for the avoidance of double taxation and the prevention of fiscal evasion with respect to taxes on income, recommends that the House, in terms of Section 231, subsection 2 of the Constitution, approve the said agreement. Agreed? Thank you. You've captured that. Okay. I think we've done extremely well in terms of time. And this brings us to the end of our committee meeting on this items for today. And I want to thank you for taking your time. And doing what you expected to do by explaining almost each and every aspect of what these treaties are meant to assist the country with. And the role of parliamentarians, therefore, becomes very, very more clearly defined in the process. And thank you very much. Maybe there is tea. I don't know, Cindy. Is it budget constraints? Lunch? Okay. Thank you.